Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Hey, good morning. Happy Monday. Okay, so we got a lot to cover today. So I'm going to do a brief introduction on the where we are and what's going on in the economy, and then kick it over to Freddie to start digging into earnings. We're still in the thick of earnings season. We also need to cover what's going on with interest rates and also our portfolio models. So let me get this kicked off. So we've always said to better understand what's happening with this coronavirus and dealing with this crisis is we need to separate the economy from the financial system, from the capital markets. Because if we mix it all together, it's going to get real messy. But the economy is I don't even know how to describe it, but it's not to be overly dramatic. It is bad. So last week, we got the rate of unemployment spiked to 14.7% in the month of April. Now, remember, we're coming off a 50-year all-time low. And in 1 month, we wiped out a decade's worth of jobs. So during the financial crisis, we lost 8 million jobs. To put that in context, 8 million jobs, and it took almost 8 years to recover that. We lost over 20 million in 1 month. Now, the concern we have is many of those jobs that are furloughed or temporary, we're expected to become permanent. And we'll talk about that in a second. But that leads to this economic recovery is going to be longer than we thought. And it's going to be a muted recovery, similar to what we saw after the financial crisis. We'll have potentially an initial pop, but it's going to be a challenge. Now, the financial system is stronger than it's ever been, and even with the reserves the banks are taking, they've got very strong Tier 1 capital ratios. We're not too worried about the banking crisis. There's a mindset that we're going to keep spending. We're absolutely not judgmental about that. I think the government response has been swift and appropriate and has done a lot to help put money into the system. If you watch M2, the money aggregates have grown over 35% in the last 3 months. Now, the International Monetary Fund estimates that over $14 trillion of stimulus will be spent in the global economy as a result of the coronavirus. And in our scope or our focus right now is on Europe. Europe is very quietly dealing with some really important issues that will deal with the longevity of the European Union. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let me stop there and turn it over to Freddie to talk about earnings and the equity markets.
Thanks, Greg. So as we stand right now, quarter one earnings are expected to decrease by about 13% year over year. And revenue is expected to increase by 20 bips from last year's quarter. Earnings season, we're about halfway through. 278 companies in the S&P have reported data. 55% of those have beaten on earnings, and 61 have beaten their sales estimates. The sectors that have seen the most success are staples, healthcare, and infotech, with 80% of those companies beating expectations. Specifically, infotech has had the highest earnings growth rate of any sector with 6.3%, with 8 of their 13 sub-industries reporting higher earnings, with semiconductors and system software reporting the highest growth. Most recently, PayPal reported earnings that were really, really good. Revenue growth was up 20% in April. Despite the lockdown, they gained 7.4 million new accounts and grew payment volume by 22%. And that you look at MasterCard and Visa, they both saw declines of over 20%. The stock shot up 14% on earnings, and it's up 34% year to date now, highlighting another example of a thriving growth stock with a clear advantage in the world that we're in right now. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Greg.
So yeah, we've got Under Armour, Marriott, Zimmer. We got a couple of companies that are releasing earnings today as well. If you had to put a value, and I know you've done this work at the end of the month, but what's fair value for the S&P 500 right now?
So last time I ran the numbers, where we were looking at 2650 to 2700. Right now, the S&P is at 2900. So it's up. It's now just down 9% year to date, and we're up 14% off of all time highs. So it's been quite the rally, even with all the bad economic data that we're seeing.
Yeah, and the earnings coming out. So we had a pretty low expectation for first quarter earnings before the coronavirus really started spreading, just because we were kind of felt like we were in the eighth to ninth inning of this economic expansion, and we saw some signs of deterioration for earnings. And then when the virus really hit in March, the bottom fell out. So we're really seeing a bifurcated quarter where and companies have actually said this, very Dickinson, a tale of the best of times or the worst of times, a tale of two cities there. And so the second quarter is when we've been completely in the lockdown. It's going to be devastating if we can't see a second half where we accelerate. We don't expect to see that. So second quarter, get ready. It's going to be a difficult one. All right. But Adam, how is this affecting credit markets now?
So last week we had another $90 billion in new issuance. So the train keeps rolling on with just massive issuance. And what was even more surprising last week, it was 50 issuers last week. So everyone's coming out of the woodwork to issue debt with low rates and low volatility back in the markets. And we're expecting similar week this week. I think it's about $50 billion again. But what I would say is that I think it's catching up to the credit markets. You know, a couple weeks ago, it seemed like you could do no wrong if you issued debt. But right now, there's a lot of names that are wider on the break. Apple came and those performed. So clearly people are seeking those high rated names. But overall, credit spreads widened last week with the massive supply. So I think you're starting to see, that point where there's not as many buyers or their buying capacity is full. So far this year, we've almost hit $1 trillion in new issuance already. We're at $900 million. So
that's amazing. But here's what else is amazing: is this issuance is coming. It is at all time low levels of absolute interest rates. So even though we're seeing more downgrades, the issuer's cost of capital is actually lower, I bet, than it was 10 years ago when they were issuing in normalized markets with higher interest rates and tighter spreads.
Absolutely. I mean, we were talking, when Disney came at plus 290 on a spread basis, we said that's incredible. But yeah,
way
on a cost
high.
Of debt, it was, yeah, I mean, it was
right.
Just over 3%. So yeah, the cost of debt really is.
Disney, by the way, is also coming to debt again today.
Because why not? Now, what I will say is that there are some pockets where you can't issue debt at cheap levels. And United was an example last week who attempted to bring debt and then pulled it at the last minute. They were trying to raise just over $2 billion, and they were actually, this was secured debt. Now, granted, they were securing it to some older planes. I think investors kind of saw through that, but price talk was north of 11% is where they were going to have to price it. And so they pulled it saying, hey, this is too expensive. Let's reevaluate somewhere down the road. So they've already gotten $5 billion in payroll protection, and they're looking for $4.5 billion from the U.S. government. So this is just kind of a little bit on top. So I think they can weather the storm a little bit and hope for a lower rate if things normalize. But so not everyone can issue.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna somewhat switch and say someone who is going to issue a lot of debt is the U.S. government. Came out last week saying they're going to issue $3 trillion this quarter.
Wow.
So they're also going to issue the 20-year treasury once again. So that's coming back out since 1986, first time. And Greg, I know we were talking about this with a client, but there's this thought that if you're issuing $3 trillion in debt, interest rates have to increase. But I won't speak for you, but you can jump in here. But I think still the risk is to the downside as the Fed has this infinity and beyond balance sheet that's now over $6 trillion. So they're the natural buyer here of this debt. So I think they'll keep interest rates low. I don't know if you have thoughts there.
So this is a longer conversation, but the question is, that won't all this money cause an increase in inflation? And I think the answer is that the way monetary policy now is being executed, with excess reserves being held at on the Fed's balance sheet, that what the Fed will do is manipulate interest rates through that mechanism, forcing rates lower across the yield curve. And we do not see, at this point, given the slack resources in the economy, we don't see a spike in inflation. In fact, I think there's an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning about the Fed, and they don't want to go to negative interest rates, but mathematically, they may not have a choice, especially from a global standpoint. So, hey, before we switch over to portfolio models, just a comment on credit also, Adam. We went into the beginning of the year, at the end of last year, we were talking about a potential pivot in the credit cycle. And now we're starting to see J.Crew, Neiman Marcus, Hertz, a lot of companies starting to file bankruptcy or hire restructuring counsel. So what are you seeing in terms of a shift in the credit cycle? And what does that mean for bond purchase, the corporate bond market?
So I think it's really bifurcated. There's a lot of companies that are doing just fine. You know, as we talked about, Apple earnings was really good. If you're, you know, high rated, have a lot of cash on your balance sheet, you're just fine. You're seeing your credit spreads tighten. But if you look down the stack and you kind of dissect indexes and you look at Triple C has done horrendously this year.
Total return is worse than negative 22%, I think, year to date.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, it you're seeing a massive dislocation. If you're just in a sector who is kind of in this pocket of, if you're retail, if you're airline, if you're energy, you get gobbled up into that, regardless of what your balance sheet looks like.
Yep. Charlie, what's the one thing you really miss being able to do that you can't right now because of the quarantine?
One thing. I can only name one. Well, I do. I am a bit of a foodie, so I do miss going out to restaurants. But that would just be one thing on a long, long, long list.
Freddie, how about you?
The gym.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, I would reiterate that. Yeah, for the gym.
I really think this is a good telltale of our group dynamic here.
I'm not a big baseball guy, but once a year I go to Victory Field to watch the Indians, and I just miss not that I can't go do that right now. So we are not in normal times. Anything else on high yield that you have before we go to portfolio models, Charlie?
Yeah, of course. And then just one last point on interest rates. Do you guys see that 2, 3, and 5-year treasuries hit all-time lows on Friday? So bring it back to, if you're issuing out debt that's spread to 2, 3, and 5s, I mean, if you're plus 200, plus 300, it's still super cheap on the company standpoint. But yeah, like Adam said, triple Cs have been really terrible year to date. For last week, we're seeing a little bit of a difference between investment grade to high yield. So investment grade really got punished by the oversupply in the primary market. And so those bonds widen out. In high yield, though, we did see credit tighten about 18 basis points for the first full week of May. For the different rating tiers, these mirrored the week prior. Single Bs were the outperformer, followed by double Bs. Triple Cs were positive, but they only tightened 4 basis points. The index now sits under 400 bips wider of year-end 2019 levels. And inflows were strong again at $3.5 billion. This is the 6th consecutive week where ETFs and mutual funds have seen inflows. The primary market picked back up. There was $10 billion in pricing last week. These deals included Avis and Kraft Heinz. Avis issued looking for liquidity due to the car rental industry being one of those maligned industries like energy and retail. And then Kraft Heinz sought to issue $3.5 billion to fund a tender for short-term notes. As Adam spoke, United Airlines made the biggest headline in high yield. They were set to offer $2.25 billion of secured notes, but even after boosting the yields from 9% to 11%, they ended up pulling the offer altogether.
And then I'll just have a quick note on energy markets. We saw another week of price recovery. WTI crude oil rose 25%, Brent rose 17%, and natural gas actually fell 4%. WTI crude oil is now just under $25. This is the second consecutive week of price recovery following optimism of global supply reductions. Unsurprisingly, U.S. rig count has dropped below 300 for the first time since 2009. IHS market data has actually estimated that global crude oil supply will drop by 14 million barrels per day from April to June, which that will be the largest oil production drop in history for the industry. So despite the recent recovery, oil prices are still low, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on American independence. Estimates of long-term leverage at WTI price to $25 see these companies shooting up to high single digits. I think, for one example, Apache is expected to reach about 9x leverage. That's
so Charlie, when you say,
high yield energy.
Charlie, when you say that it's going to challenge the energy's independence, is that because we're more influenced by OPEC, or what do you mean by that?
It just that at $25, none of these countries are really adept to continue on operating in that landscape. You see Saudi Arabia and Russia; the companies that operate there are much better suited to operate long term under these lower prices. Whereas American shale companies, optimal price is $65, and we are very far away from that.
Yeah. One of our big issues, we in this week's edition of the Weekly Insight, we talk about the seeds of the next financial crisis are being planted today. And one of the biggest concerns we have is Europe. And I'm going to segue into our portfolio model changes today. But the issue around Europe is the European Union is different than the United States. It's a co-op of 27 different countries with their own political systems, separate taxing authorities, separate fiscal budget and debt issuance. So it is a common currency, but they don't have common taxing authority and common debt issuance like the United States. It's important that investors understand those differences because it's not a substitute. The euro is not a substitute for the dollar. And the problem now is that the European Central Bank is buying the debt of those sovereign countries, similar to what the Federal Reserve is doing through its asset purchase program. But Germany filed a lawsuit that basically challenged the proportional buying. So they were buying it in a way that was disproportional. And Germany wants the bond buying to be proportional and not basically subsidize the weaker countries. In addition, the ECB is pushing to have a one-time joint debt issuance of corona bonds to help with the coronavirus pandemic. And there's been pushback on that. That would be the first euro-denominated bond, but Germany's pushing back on that as well. This is all happening actually in German courts. So it's something to watch right now because it's going to challenge how the ECB executes its bond buying program and potentially put limits around it, which is going to really mitigate, I think, or challenge how many bullets that the European Union has in its holster to help stimulate economic growth across the EU, and which is already slower than the United States. So with that, that's a kind of a leading transition to what are we doing in the international sector in our portfolio models. So let me turn it over to Freddie and Adam to talk us through that.
Thanks, Greg. So in our core series, as you said, we're reducing our exposure in our international sleeves. This is both developed and emerging, as we don't see any clear catalysts for growth, as you mentioned. And we're focusing most of our exposure into domestic large cap. Within domestic large cap, we're building up defense by adding to USMV, the low vol ETF, and also VTV, the large cap value ETF. Value is currently down 19% year to date. And underperforming growth heavily. We're taking that from our exposure to the growth ETF, ticker Schwab G, SCHG. This ETF is actually up 1% for the year, and 37% of its assets are in Infotech. So we've talked about the heavy concentration at the top. The specific growth ETF has a top 10 concentration of 42%. And its top three names are accounting for about 25% of its assets in Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon. So those are the changes we're making in Core Series.
Adam, anything you'd add to that?
No, yeah, I think it's just that building up the defense and staying in large cap when you look at earnings. You know, while international markets are down, we talked a lot about this last year, while they're down well more than domestic markets, when you look at on a valuation basis, they're actually getting more expensive as their earnings are quickly dwindling. So that's kind of driving that move.
Well, I'm going to, this has gone a little bit longer this morning. This part on the weekly insight about the seeds of the next financial crisis or the next crisis being planted right now, this really impacts things that we take for granted. And we've always said that municipal bonds are some of the safest investments that an investor can make, including general obligation or revenue bonds. We still believe that. However, there are other municipal bonds that back convention centers, arenas, economic development, and even universities. And particularly small universities are going to be challenged as society reevaluates higher education and how that whole model works. It's not going to happen right away, but I think over the next 10 years, we talk about this a little bit in this issue. We've got challenges that are going to domestic economy is going to be faced with. The other thing we point out is that the labor market, we used to think that we would have a bounce back. We would get this labor market once we got transparency through the virus back to work. However, more and more we're under the impression that these furloughed workers, many of them are going to be permanent layoffs. So a growing portion of the labor force is going to start to look more like the 2008-2009 period, where just getting people back to work is going to be more and more of a challenge. So with that, let's transition to the week. I'm going to close this down, and you guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you during the week. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.